This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Suffolk Matters, where all of Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News, opinions, and insights you won't hear anywhere else. Filling in for AME President Dan Levler, here's your host, AME's Chief of Staff, Ryan McGarry.
Good morning to our listeners. I'm AME Chief of Staff Ryan McGarry, filling in for our President Dan Levler today. And with us this morning, we have the esteemed Assemblyman Steve Englebright. Assemblyman, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you back. I know it's been some time since you're on the show. So if you wouldn't mind, just to start off, we have so many listeners out there. Some of them are probably very familiar with who you are and what you've accomplished. Others may be hearing from you for the first time. We have a huge audience across all of Long Island. So if you wouldn't mind just giving some background of your extensive experience in government, where you started, what got you involved, and how it landed you as a senior statesman.
Well, I'm a geologist by training, so I got interested in public issues by reading about the increasing degradation of our water supply. And that drew me toward talking to some legislators at the time, some county legislators, and trading ideas back and forth. One of them at some point said, you know, why don't you consider actually running for office instead of just being a source of information for those of us who are in office. And so I ran for the county legislature in 1983. And I ran on protecting the Pine Barrens, a critical groundwater watershed for Long Island. And also I ran against the opening of the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant. Those were my two main issues. And the people who I encountered knocking on their doors and at the shopping centers said, we're going to give you a chance. And they elected me to the county legislature. I served five terms there. And there was an opening for the seat that I now hold in the assembly, the 4th Assembly District seat. And I thought that I could continue the work that I had done at the county level by moving to the state. And I've been in the state now for about 31 years.
That's incredible. So 3 decades at the state, a decade at the county, nearly 40 years of public service and representation to the people of Suffolk County. So we commend your leadership there. Is there anything that you learned at the county level that influenced your approach to how you went to Albany?
I learned a great deal at the county level. The issues that I worked on are still the issues that I work on today, the issues that relate to the quality of life of our communities. We have a special circumstance being in coastal New York where we are 100% dependent upon water taken from the ground for our domestic and industrial uses. I have been very concerned from the very beginning about making sure that water supply is safe and pure and predictable, because clean water is the first limiting factor for sustainability. And I would like my legacy, the legacy of all of us as we pass the torch to our children, to be that we are giving them a sustainable lifestyle and a place that is not undergoing progressive deterioration in terms of water chemistry.
No, very fortunate to have your voice and your leadership on that issue. We're going to spend a great deal of this episode speaking about water quality and your work to protect it. Such an important issue for you as a candidate, as an assemblyman, but also for all of us as residents here in Suffolk County. Before we get into that, and it could be touching upon water quality as well, in those nearly over four decades of public service, any standout highlights that you're especially proud of from your career, that any accomplishments, pieces of legislation that really stand out as your crown jewels?
Well, I'm very, very proud of the county of Suffolk. We now have the largest county park system in the nation. When I was a county legislator, I pioneered the idea of using parkland as a tool to protect drinking water in a groundwater watershed. helped define that by passing the open space program for the county when I was the chair of the committee on parks. That's a great legacy, and it helps us in the direction of sustainability, which I'm very, very proud of. At the state level, I've done many things with the help of my colleagues. We've advanced bills to, for example, I was the first to pass bills in the legislature for renewable energy, for solar energy. I'm the author of the Solar Net Metering Act, the bill that allows all customer classes to have eligibility for net metering, for wind net metering. I'm very proud of the fact that we passed a bill called the CLCPA, the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, which is still the gold standard, really, for our sister states and even for the nation for addressing the crisis of climate change. We passed that bill in 2019, and it sets goals that, if we meet them, gives us a chance, again, to pass to the next generation and the next a healthful environment. Speaking of a healthful environment, last year I was the prime author of the amendment to the state constitution called the Green Amendment. A simple idea. The voters passed that premise last year with an overwhelming vote. And it's a simple amendment to the constitution. It says that if you are a citizen of the state of New York, you have the right to clean air, clean water, and a healthful environment. And it sets in place the premise that these are inalienable rights. And so I'm very proud of that as well.
No, as well you should be. And, you know, from my perspective, it's interesting you say that these should be inalienable rights for us. And I don't know, be hard-pressed to find somebody who would disagree, right, who doesn't want clean air, clean water. And yet it's still interesting, and I'm interested in your perspective on it, that here the environment doesn't care what party you're from. Climate change doesn't care what party you're from, but yet protecting the environment somehow or combating or taking steps to combat climate change has become such a divisive partisan topic. Wondering what your perspective is there, how it became so, and how you and your colleagues are able to kind of cut through the noise of partisan politics and actually pass good policy for hardworking people here on Long Island.
Well, there are some people who are short-sighted, and climate deniers tend to be people who have personal interests or represent those who do in profiteering from some aspect of the burning of fossil fuels. But there are others who are open-minded on both sides of the aisle. They are people who I seek out and I try to work with, and I am blind to their party affiliation if they are open to learning and sharing ideas and working toward goals that will serve the people who sent us.
Makes sense to me. And just going back to something else you said on the open space program in Suffolk County, as the union that represents the county workforce, one, it's meant so much to us because those open space properties become part of our Parks Department inventory. But as a resident, it's just so important. And we thank you for your leadership there because, you know, you hear so often, and oftentimes these are the same people who will maybe be a little bit more apprehensive to support climate change initiatives. They also say they don't want to see Long Island looking like Queens or the city, they don't want to see overdevelopment. And here, because we have these policies, these open space programs that you've started, Assemblyman, you know, we know that in perpetuity, we're always going to have those lands protected for passive use for our residents and for the environment and for the water that lies beneath them. So thank you. For our listeners this morning, we're joined by Assemblyman Steve Englebright. The Assemblyman has spent over 40 years in public service, both at the county level and now at the state level as Assemblyman, where he's chair of the Environmental Conservation Committee. Again, Assemblyman, as you know, we've kind of talked about your successes protecting the environment in the past as a legislator and assemblyman. As chair of this committee, what are some of your priorities and what are your priorities looking forward? Not just those that you've kind of been focused on, but should you win election this year, what would you be hoping to accomplish moving forward?
Well, the immediate hope that I have is that people will turn their ballot over and look for Proposition 1. The election that we have before us has a proposition that is an Environmental Bond Act. What that is a way for us to have the financial tools to actually implement and carry out the premise of the Green Amendment of last year. So this is the second referendum statewide vote in 2 years, and they are conceptually linked, and making the promise last year is the first part. Making the implementation and capability to follow through is what's before the voters now. But to find it, you're going to have to turn the ballot over. So for all of you who've ever played tennis, just remember this, the action is all in the wrist, and to turn the ballot over, and Proposition 1 will be on the back. And it's the first time in 26 years that we've had an opportunity to invest into our future through an environmental investment program, the Bond Act. It will allow us to protect the high lands of our state in the Adirondacks, as well as our coastal region here on Long Island, important habitats to protect endangered species, woodlands that gather rainwater and make it available for our population, and to prepare for climate change and the transition to electric instead of combustion propulsion for our vehicles. So this is a big deal. It's the first priority going forward. If I am fortunate enough to be reelected, I want to make sure that the oversight of the use of that $4.2 billion is as responsible and transparent as possible. And so I see that as a responsibility of the committee. I mentioned before the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. We passed that law. It's now time to implement it. There was a three-year window. We passed it in 2019, a three-year window to prepare a plan for implementation. That needs, again, to have legislative oversight to make sure that the agencies are working together and playing nice and pursuing the objectives that are black-letter law, which, if achieved, will protect our people from the ravages of climate change.
Now, important work. I'm glad we have leaders with the foresight like you in office. We hope to keep you in office. Just returning, and I think we'll probably return back to it before the end of the episode, but the Environmental Bond Act, Proposition 1, again, for listeners, turn that ballot over on Election Day and make sure you're voting on both sides. Obviously, you've talked about the ways it would protect the environment, but number one, where does this $4.2 billion come from? I'm sure a lot of voters are interested in hearing that. And then two, from a union perspective, we're interested in the jobs that go along with environmental protection, because I think sometimes there's a disconnect in the minds of many in the public that they think environment, they think bad for jobs, but actually it's quite the opposite. If we're investing in protecting our environment, we're creating good middle-class union jobs for working people here in our local and regional economies. So if you wouldn't mind just kind of expounding on that.
Well, the Bond Act, of course, is a borrowing. So it's the authorization to, in a progressive manner, not all at once, on an as-needed basis, to borrow until the authorization is expended. So over the next several decades, we would be borrowing that amount, investing it to achieve the stated purposes of protecting the environment. I'm glad you asked about jobs, because it's anticipated that the use of the Bond Act will create 100,000 new jobs.
That's incredible.
It's incredible. And it's the future. It's the catalyst for the future. We need to transition into a society that is less dependent on fossil fuels, is not causing more carbon dioxide to be put into the atmosphere as a result of combustion of gasoline and oil and gas, natural gas. And so in transitioning, we're going to need a lot of laborers and inventors and investors, all of the things that we anticipate will create jobs. And we see it already. We're advocating for offshore wind right now. And in my own district in Port Jefferson, right next to the less than optimal performing Port Jefferson power plant, we're going to have the base for offshore wind operations. They're going to use the port for the place that is basically going to be maintaining the offshore wind installations, and the ships that will be coming and going from Port Jefferson Harbor will bring with them hundreds of jobs. It's a preview of the kind of transition that we need to do, and also the kinds of jobs that will be produced. A huge industry awaits fully being fleshed out, and we're just at the vanguard of that. And it's exciting because it means that we'll not only have a more healthful environment, but we'll also have an economically vibrant one.
No, the offshore wind projects, and projects plural because there are a few throughout our region, very exciting new industry that's coming. Huge private as well as public investment in these endeavors. I mean, the South Fork Wind Project alone is supposed to be able to power over 70,000 homes once completed. Elimination of 6 million tons of carbon emissions. And also the other thing I think we're all excited about and that you've been involved with offshore wind is that we will be bringing a national offshore wind training facility to our region and what that means for the future of the industry and Long Island's role in it. So I was wondering if you could, one, put into perspective what powering 70,000 homes means, what eliminating 6 million tons of carbon emissions means, and also if you could expand a little bit on this new training facility and the way that will poise Long Island and Long Islanders to be on the cutting edge of tomorrow's economy and future industry.
Well, as you know, that training program is part of this imaginative vision that Governor Hochul put forward just a week ago, along with labor leaders and other community leaders. We're going to have a facility that is dedicated to training the workforce. So this isn't just a pie-in-the-sky idea. We're actually establishing the educational facility that will be training people for jobs that are being planned for. That is, again, sort of cutting edge. We're going to be out ahead of almost any of our other sister states, and so that will make us a leader in renewable energy, job and workforce training. So that's a good investment, and it resonates with the overall premise that the economy on Long Island is the environment. They are synonymous, they are intertwined, and if we are wise, we will utilize that to increase the quality of life and the availability of jobs. So that's really terrific. I'm excited that the governor has taken the time in this busy campaign season to come down and to help kick off this imaginative and necessary next step.
You couldn't be more correct, Assemblyman. The economy and the environment here on Long Island, one and the same. Our heritage industries all are dependent on clean water. Our tourism industry, which is absolutely vital to our regional economy, directly dependent upon our water. So we thank you for the great work you're doing. Again, for our listeners, you're listening to Suffolk Matters. I'm Ryan McGarry, Chief of Staff, filling in for President Dan Leveler. With us today is Assemblyman Steve Englebright. We're talking about some of the great ways he, as chair of the Environmental Conservation Committee, has been leading the way for New York State and for Long Island. And Assemblyman, you were recently honored with being named the Leon Billing Environmental Achievement Award winner recently. You were the first New York State legislator to be honored with this award. I'm just wondering, I know you're a humble man, but if you could tell a little bit about what this award is, what it means to be honored with it, and what it means to be the first New York State legislator to be recognized with this honor.
It is a great honor. It's my first national recognition. It was provided by the National Conference of State Legislators in Boulder, Colorado, during the summer. I couldn't go there because we had a hearing, here. Leon G. Billings was the man who was a state representative in Maryland who also worked in the Senate and wrote the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act. Those are the pillars of the environmental movement of the 1960s, and they are still the most important environmental laws ever written. So to receive a recognition in his name from my colleagues across the nation for the work that we did here in New York on the Green Amendment that I mentioned before, the guarantee that every citizen of the state will have the right, constitutional right, to clean air, clean water, and a healthful environment is in fact an echo of Leon Billings' work. It's part of New York's constitution now, and why it's significant nationally is because I and many of my colleagues believe that it should be an amendment also to our national constitution, ultimately. You know, when the forefathers founded our nation, there were no pollution problems. Rivers didn't catch on fire. Nobody got lung disease from breathing the air. But in our modern world, these are real problems, and people should not be subjected to that. Their children should not be subjected to that kind of uncertainty. And it should be that we add to the premise of being an American as well as being a New Yorker that you have the right to live in a healthful environment and bring your children up and such.
Well, we certainly wish you luck on your work toward achieving that goal. I know you'll be working closely with your colleagues at the federal level to do that. So we thank you for your leadership. We congratulate you on being recognized, and deservingly so. Obviously, you have an election coming up this November. It's only just over a week away. Next Tuesday will be the election. So, Assemblyman, I know we've spent a long time, and rightfully so, on your many great efforts to protect our local environment, protect our economy as it relates to our environment. But one of the things that's going to be first and foremost on voters' minds this election day is our economy. And I know you, as well as the governor and your majority leadership up in Albany, have been very focused in the New York State budget for next year, looking at the economy, looking at increasing rates of inflation, and taking appropriate steps now rather than waiting for tomorrow to prepare for combating the rising rates of inflation. Just wondering if you could touch on that a little bit and some of the things that have been put in the state budget that you supported that might be able to protect Long Islanders in particular, with taxpayers throughout New York State.
Yes, well, the gas tax holiday immediately comes to mind. It's something that I circulated a letter with my colleagues in the majority, the Long Island majority of Democratic Assembly members. And we asked the speaker to put the gas tax holiday into the budget, and we passed that this year. And that was before the inflationary spiral that we're in took place. It was entirely predictable. The inflation is not just statewide, it's global. It follows a pandemic, and it was a predictable thing. But that inflation needed to be tamped down, and so we passed that gas tax holiday for the state and made it eligible to be adopted also by the county. So it's about a 26-cent per gallon reduction, and that's a good start. We're also aware that this is where we invented suburbia, and we're all depending on the ability to use our major arterials to get to and from work. And the Long Island Expressway was in deteriorating condition, and we put $80 million into the budget and pushed. Again, I was pleased to work with my colleagues to push for the funding for repaving the expressway. That's an important part of the process of keeping our commerce vibrant and vital. And of course, we also were successful in pushing for record amounts of school aid, which for many of our districts is the difference each year in being able to keep the doors open for the next generation of Long Islanders. And investing into our children is always a priority, and it holds down taxes, local property taxes, to the extent that we're able to bring those dollars back from Albany. So those are a few of the things that we worked on this year that were very successful. And I'm pleased that I was joined with vigorous support from the colleagues in our majority conference.
No, you should be very proud of those accomplishments. I mean, these are the things that, in my mind, when I'm out talking to AME members or just Suffolk County voters in general, these are the things that are top of their minds, right? School tax, which, again, that increased school aid helps level that and cap that. So hopefully it's not going into their pocketbooks. The infrastructure investment, $80 million, Long Island Expressway, already completed on time, which is an incredible feat. And again, to go back to that jobs angle that we're always focused on at AME is, number one, to have functioning roads that you can move about freely
right.
is a necessity for an economy. And I don't want anyone to lose sight of that. It's the ability to move goods, services, consumers, and laborers freely about the region, and making sure that our main arteries of transportation are functional is a key purpose of government. And the fact that we were able to invest, use union labor to repave those roads, get them operational fully, open, and complete it on time, that's something that shouldn't be as rare as it is, but we are very thankful for that. So thank you for your leadership there. Assemblymen, again, your election just over a week away. What do you want voters to know about as we're approaching the final few minutes of our show this morning? What do you want voters to know about you, your record, and just how your campaign is going thus far?
Well, take a look at my record. I'm very proud of it. I live up to my promises, and I make commitments, and I follow through. Take a look at Route 347, which we're building now, again, with union labor, which is really important because it's predictably of high quality. The redesign and rebuilding of Route 347 from Hopog out to Miller Place is almost half completed at this point. And that's a real milestone. The part that's been done is predictive of the look and the function that we're going to have for that entire length of major arterial. It is important because it also serves access to the largest employer in the Bi-County region, which is the State University at Stony Brook. And I'm very pleased that the Department of Transportation has moved up their schedule by 2 years for advancing the completion of that project, and it's really important. While we're talking about arterials and the environment, let me just mention that one of the things that I'm hoping that we can do going forward is bring the Metropolitan Transportation Authority into conjunction with the need to electrify the north line of the Long Island Railroad, to move in that direction. Instead of continuing to use diesel locomotives, will improve the air quality. It will also make it possible to pull more road, more cars off of the road, because more people will be using the train. To have a straight run into Manhattan is made possible, I believe, by the fact that Governor Hochul just announced 2 weeks ago that the third track is now available. So we should be dovetailing with that new access to Penn Station, and it is a game changer, really, for those who work in the urban core and get up every morning and dread their drive to the office. If we make the trains work better, everything will prosper and will raise the equity value of every home within the catchment of the railroad. So we're going to go forward on that. And one of the things we're trying to do is take the end of the line, I like to call it the beginning of the line in Port Jefferson, and relocate it so that we don't have an at-grade crossing on Route 112, and that the train station terminus will be located on what was previously the Lawrence Aviation property, where we can have a major train yard that will in turn be in conjunction with the electrification. So the infrastructure for our quality of life needs to continue to be invested into, and I'm dedicated to that.
And we thank you for that. There's nothing, you know, this is what government should be doing, investing in infrastructure, investing in mass transportation. I mean, you mentioned direct access to Penn Station. We also have coming with MTA the opening of East Side Access just around the corner, where we'll be able to access the eastern side of Manhattan rather than just Penn Station through Grand Central Madison Terminal that hopefully will be opening in the coming months. So investment in infrastructure, investment in mass transportation, protection of our environment, protecting of our water quality, protection of our open spaces. These are all things that you've been leading the charge on. AME is proud to endorse you. We're proud that you are there for working people, that you're a good steward of our government, and we thank you for your service. I know that you're hoping everyone will vote to reelect Assemblyman Steve Englebright this election day, but you're also hoping that folks will turn that ballot over, and what should they do with Proposition 1?
I would hope that they would vote yes.
I thought you might say that.
I hope they will invest into optimism and a sense of blue skies for the future, both in the figurative and literal sense.
I look forward to that as well, Assemblyman. Again, for our listeners, Chief of Staff Ryan McGarry filling in for President Dan Leveler today. Assemblyman Steve Englebright was a guest. We thank you so much for joining us and wish you the best of luck on Election Day.
Thank you very much.